I've traveled every road in Pennsylvania. I've been everywhere, man.
Hey guys, welcome to today's episode. It's a very special episode with more guests, and I'm really excited, and I think this is going to be a good conversation about campaigns going on right now in central Pennsylvania, as well as how we can better win as Democrats in central Pennsylvania. And joining me here today is Chris Benson. Chris Benson is the communications director for Amanda Waldman's campaign, and I've known him for probably about 10 years now, actually. So welcome, Chris.
Thanks, Tyler. Thanks for having us.
Yeah, and we've also got Chuck Black, who's the finance director for Lee Griffin and Amanda Waldman's campaign. He's also the vice chair of the Lycoming County Democratic Committee. Welcome, Chuck.
Thank you.
I've also known Chuck for about 10 years. And somebody that I'm just now meeting is Christian Lujinski, who's the field director for both Jackie Baker and Lee Griffin's campaign. Welcome, Christian.
Hi, nice to be here. Thanks for having me. I am the new kid on the block here.
Well, it's good to have you. And I'm just going to start out, since it seems like, well, there's actually no common campaign between all of you. Isn't that right? But should we start out with Lee Griffin's campaign? I kind of just want to hear how it's going. Maybe Chuck, you want to start that?
Yes. So it's a really exciting campaign. We just had our first and only debate against Congressman Keller on Tuesday at the Clinton County Christian Coalition. I thought Lee was very well received. In addition, he is currently on the road doing a 15 county tour, which I think has been very positive for people in a socially distant way to get to meet him, talk to him about his campaign, why he's involved, and just learn more about him. So it's I'm really proud of all the work of our entire campaign. I think there's a lot of excitement, and we are running a 15 county campaign. This is not a campaign just focused on one district. I mean, one part of our congressional. So I think we are headed straight to November 3rd, working as hard as we can.
Yeah, I've been really impressed with Lee's. I feel like he's really branded himself as like kind of a fresh start and like somebody with original ideas, and it's a really tough race, but I think he's been able to get his vision out there and like communicated his brand, which is really important.
No, and I agree 100%. It'll be public on the FEC reports that we just filed. This past quarter, we had 300 donors to our campaign. In the before times, before COVID, we would have been able to do fundraisers of all types in all 15 counties. So COVID has limited our ability, but through Act Blue alone, we've raised over $20,000, which, while it might be a small amount, it is showing that, the dollar donation, the $5 donation, all of that is allowing us to get our message out. We're running a very intense digital campaign. We have signs up all across the district, postcards, everything. So we are might be a small budgeted campaign, but living in the world that we're in, I think it's going very well.
Yeah, I've been helping out with Katie Evans' campaign, doing her fundraising as well, and it's kind of amazing to me how especially in coronavirus, you can really pack a punch with just a small team that is well put together and everything. Christian, how's it from your angle? And I don't envy you, by the way. I was Mike Molisevich's field director in 2016, and it was a dreadful experience.
Oh, okay, yeah. So you have a little bit of experience of the amount of driving that you have to do to cover this district.
It's a huge amount of driving. I feel like I developed permanent back issues just from that, just from the amount of driving.
I would not be surprised.
It's a geographically huge campaign and 15 county committees to work with. It's a difficult job. How are you finding it?
Yeah, so actually I've been really happy and inspired by the amount of support that we've been getting from each county. I think Lee's campaign started pretty early on reaching out to each county committee, and that really set the groundwork for just a good relationship. And we've also had groups outside of the county committees like the Lycoming Women Democrats and the Wyoming County Women Democrats who have done an immense amount of advertising and just legwork for us. So it's been really, really good.
I kind of want to just jump on what Christian said. Living in this COVID world, we've had such an immense of other groups being involved this year. And, you know, just as Taylor, I've been involved in campaigns since before I could vote. We've never had Democratic billboards up on the highway. And this past year, the Lycoming County Women Democrats purchased 7 billboards to promote not just Joe Biden, but our entire Democratic ticket. So the huge level of presence that we've been able to have, not just from our own campaign, but because of groups like them, I think is having a positive difference, and people are seeing there are Democrats out here.
Yeah, I think it's I think the strength of the Democratic committees has grown a lot in the last 4 years. I think we've built a lot of really good capacity through those organizations. Where are you guys seeing support from that you didn't expect? Because it's a really weird district. I feel like it's kind of anchored by Williamsport, you know, and then you've got kind of a base down in Lewisburg as well. And then like up in like Tioga and Bradford, you have some like really strong groups too. But like, where are you guys like finding a lot of support that you wouldn't have thought?
I mean, I can speak for Amanda's campaign when I say, you know, her strategies has been, you know, when we're going door to door, her main focus is going to people that have Trump signs. And as brave as that is, and it's one of the many reasons why I love working with her, because she really is a bulldog when it comes to that kind of stuff. And, you know, we were going door to door in Jersey Shore the other day, and she was talking to some people, and they had Trump signs in their yard, and they're like, you know, you don't sound like a Democrat. And just reading over some of the things, some of her positions, you know, she is not exactly your normal Democrat. And that's kind of how Democrats are going to start turning the tide here in rural areas of Pennsylvania. You know, we all agree in one form or another on a lot of things. We just take too much time trying to discover where we're differing as opposed to where we're agreeing. So trying to bridge that disconnect has been interesting. So it's a way we can turn the tide.
Great. And Amanda Waldman is running for state rep in a district that's primarily Lycoming County, but dips into Northern Union County a little bit.
Right? Yeah. So her district is interesting. So we kind of look at like a donut hole type perspective. The 83rd district is basically Williamsport and some of its outlying communities, whereas the rest of the 84th district is Lycoming County and then a few communities in Union County. So it's sizable. But for the first time, I think in probably 50 years, we actually do have the chance to finally flip it. If not this election, probably next one.
Yeah, I was really disappointed with Linda Sosniak's campaign. I thought she would have done a lot better than she did. She ended up doing. But it's Garth Everett, I think, was really entrenched in there. So with Garth gone, I think you guys do have a shot.
Yeah, and it's even with the dynamics of the race, just because of Garth's position on the state government committee and, you know, with COVID and everything, obviously his name has been in the press a lot, for the good or for the bad. So, you know, given his importance and his stature on state government, it's kind of put an interesting focus on this race and the importance of like why we need to get our voices more heard than what they have in decades.
Taylor, I also want to add that I think for Amanda's, Jackie's, Lee's, Ernie's, Katie, all of them, we have to remember this is the first time we have not had that straight party button. So, you know, we all can throw out, you know, whatever theories we want, but I don't think any of us fully know what impact that is going to have, because people need to vote the entire ballot. And I think we're going to get some people who walk into the polls or get their mail-in ballot, and they might only fill in the bubble for their preferred presidential candidate. So I do think that could very well change the entire calculus of campaigns moving forward. So I don't think any of us really, really know the impact that will have, but I'm excited to see if it helps our Democratic candidates or not.
I'm very curious about that as well. I think that's a smart thing to bring up. And Chris, going back to Amanda Waldman here, like, what is her background, and why do you think she's a strong candidate to poise to take this seat?
So Amanda has a really interesting background, and it was part of one of the reasons which drew me to her. You know, I had been out of politics for quite a little while, off and on, and Chuck kind of got me back involved earlier this year. He's like, you know, you really got to meet this really cool candidate running in the 84th. And I said, okay, cool. So we did. And she actually worked for Lieutenant Governor Catherine Baker Knoll back when she was alive, actually.
CBK,
yeah. And from 2008 to 2010, and we've had great conversations about that. She's a single mother. She has worked several jobs just to get by. She has gone to college several times over just to finally graduate while raising her children. She has been a case manager in a homeless shelter. She has managed businesses. You know, she has worked in the service industry. She has been all over the place. And she currently works in the healthcare industry right now. So it gives her a very, very interesting perspective on the good and the bad intricacies of the healthcare system. And if not anything, underscores to her more the importance why we need to be addressing hard issues like that. So compared to her opponent, who, you know, former chairman of like Cumming County Republican Party, he's a township supervisor on the board of three township supervisors, where his father-in-law is actually one of the three supervisors. You know, and as well, you know, as well as I do, that this seat has basically been passed down from Republican to Republican for the past 50 decades. So she literally woke up one day once she saw Garth Everett was retiring, and she basically said, you know, enough is enough. And that's when she decided to run. She is a first-time candidate. She is not entrenched. She's not taken any sort of corporate or political action committee related finances. So I think she is the type of Democrat that really we need to start be looking for more as we get more candidates out there. Like Jackie is a great example. Lee's a great example of these rural type of candidates that we need to get running. You know, they're open, they're honest, and you know, you might not agree with them 100% of the time, but like I said, open honesty is what we're lacking here in rural Pennsylvania, and I think these are the people to do it.
Yeah, so to kind of bounce off of what Chris was saying, I think it's interesting, especially the state candidates that we have running. None of them are the type of polished candidates that I think often try to run in rural districts and lose horribly, because most rural residents do not want a polished politician. They want a real person who has dirt under their nails. And while it can make things kind of difficult from a campaign staffer point of view when your candidate is not super, super polished and an experienced campaigner, I think it really speaks to voters that these are just average people who have realized that their communities are not doing as well as they could be.
Yeah, I think you make a great point, Christian. I often wonder what would have happened if in 2012 you had we'd had somebody else other than Phil Scola run for the old 10th seat. I wonder if we could have taken back Marino. It was such a good year for us, and he sort of embodies to me that sort of like, I think he was a Wall Street trader or something like that, sort of like polish that doesn't really come across well in Central PA. Let's talk about Jackie Baker's campaign. Christian, what's your, like, how do you think that's going, and What's she running for?
Sure. So Jackie Baker is running for State Senate District 23. That is a seat that is currently held by Jean Yaw, who has one of the worst environmental records of any state senator, yet also happens to be on the board of the Chesapeake Bay Foundation, which is a very fun bit of irony. The 23rd district is a portion of Susquehanna County, Bradford County, Sullivan County, Lycoming County, and Union County. It is the second largest district, state senate district in the state geographically. So it's a lot of work to get out on the ground, but it's the kind of work that we love doing and the kind of work that Jackie has been doing to go out and meet actual voters. Obviously, that's difficult in the time of COVID, so we've had to improvise. We've been doing road trips with socially distant outdoor gatherings. And as a mother and former educator, Jackie is really concerned about the future that Pennsylvanians are going to have for their kids and their grandkids. I think all of us here know that if you are a young person who grows up in Pennsylvania, outside of the ring of suburbs surrounding Philadelphia, generally when you turn 18, you leave. And that kind of drain is not only what has been sending Pennsylvania down the hole economically, it's also kind of what keeps us from building up an effective Democratic Party in a lot of these counties, because the young people leave and they don't come back. So while Jackie is concerned about that in her race as somebody who is involved in campaign and party, that's also concerning for me as well. So we've been trying to recruit as many younger people as possible to get involved.
Yeah, absolutely. Before we, I really want to move on soon to how we can build a better brand as Democrats and build up better capacity in central Pennsylvania. But before we do that, I want to just touch base really quickly. Are there other campaigns that you guys are looking at in central Pennsylvania that you think could be a little bit closer and maybe we can flip it? Like, what other races are you guys paying attention to?
I am a big fan of Katie Evans. I think David Rowe represents what's wrong with Harrisburg. So I'm really excited about Katie's race. I also, even though I don't live in that district, I am really excited about Michelle Siegel. I'm not sure if you had a chance to watch her debate against Senator Gordner, but you could see, you know, he is, you know, your stereotypical Harrisburg swamp creature, if you will. And she's someone who's been fighting in the streets, fighting alongside people. So while I unfortunately cannot vote for them, I really want to see Michelle Siegel elected to the Senate and Katie Evans elected to the state house. I think if we're lucky to win in the 83rd and 84th in our congressional seats, then we just need that bigger delegation for all of them. And I think both Katie and Michelle will work very well with Amanda and Jackie and Paige.
Yeah, I'm totally with you on Michelle and Katie. And full disclosure, I think I said earlier, I'm helping Katie Evans with her fundraising and some messaging stuff. I think that's going to be a really interesting race. It'll be David Rowe's first real
tough election.
Yeah. I mean, it was a little bit closer in that special, but we didn't have any students in town. And so I'm hoping that somehow the numbers game works out for her. I'm also curious about the Clinton County district. I don't remember the name of it or the number.
Joe Waltz and Stephanie.
Yeah. Yeah.
Chris and I were at the debate where fortunately Stephanie was not able to attend because she is in quarantine, even though she filmed live from a public park. So people can take that how that is. I think Joe is a very nice guy. He's a retired teacher ideology. I think he's a little more conservative than I might be, but at the end of the day, I think he's going to go to Harrisburg and represent his district well. Whereas I think when you look at Stephanie, she's all about the party ideology. One example, Joe talked about, you know, how he is a gun owner and he believes in the Second Amendment. Whereas Stephanie, in her recorded remarks, all she focused on was Tom Wolf being a socialist and how we don't need socialist policies. So I think that's going to be a really interesting race. I was told Joe has raised something like $80,000, which for a first-time candidate is really impressive. He's not taken money from PACs and not gotten a whole lot of money from the state party. So I think that's one race to watch, primarily because she is such a... I think she's so focused on her political ideas versus representing the district.
And I really just got to echo kind of what Chuck had said. And this is kind of one of the things that just really kind of motivates me even more, you know, especially with this election, that even with Amanda's opponent, Joe, and like Chuck was saying with Stephanie, you know, they're not campaigning on actual issues. If you go to their Facebook pages, you know, it's, you know, the pro Second Amendment, which is great, you know, pro-life, you know, basically the Republican line, which they've been towing for decades, and it's not working. So like our Democratic candidates were actually out there talking about issues. We're actually talking about ideas. We're actually talking about, you know, kitchen table issues, things that keep people up every single night. And the Republicans are not talking about actual issues this year. And it's just driving me more insane if you want the truth, but it's kind of a motivator. So I guess it's a good thing.
Yeah, I think that's so fascinating. It's the same thing with David Rowe down in the 85th, because like all he does is post like doctored photos of Robert Byrd saying the Democrats are racist. Just like, dude, you know, like let's talk about like he's dead. You know, he's been dead for like 10 years. You know, like, yeah. You know, can we talk about some real issues?
Yes,
yeah, yeah. And if you want to talk about racism, let's talk about what happened to Second Lady Gisele Fetterman. You know, like what are you doing? Yeah, it just seems like they're kind of deranged. Like I don't understand. It's like they're just running on culture issues.
And that's exactly what it was. And like Chuck was saying, we were at the debate with Congressman Keller and Lee Griffin, other candidates, and Margie Brown for state Senate in the neighboring district. I can't remember which district she's in.
She's over in Elk County.
Right. She's all the way over there.
And she's the 25th.
And they asked the same question about like abortion and whatnot. And she said, and she was very open and honest, like, you know, I'm running for state Senate. I'm not running for a federal issue. That's a federal issue. And she left it at that, you know, brave, and she might've lost votes because of it, but you know, it's an honest, it's an open answer. And
totally the truth.
Exactly. Exactly. And that's the thing. And the sad part is a lot of people in rural Pennsylvania will not be able to distinguish that fact. So trying to get past that has been very, very difficult.
So one interesting observation from this debate was during the entire debate, Fred Keller never mentioned the name Donald Trump, but then later that night, his social media started running an ad about how he's standing up to the Biden Pelosi socialist agenda. So I thought for the debate, he was not as partisan as say some of the other Republicans that were there, but I thought his choice of ad was really interesting.
And then what do you guys think about Paige's race in just the heart of Williamsport?
Go ahead, Chuck.
I think Paige is a well-known individual being on the school board. She certainly has a lot of support. I think with Williamsport having elected our first Democratic mayor in close to 30 years, I think there is a lot of excitement in the Democratic Party. So I think Paige could do very well.
Yeah, I would concur with that. I being an outside observer, this is the first year that I've really worked on in the upper management of a campaign. Just looking at the 83rd district in 2016 and 2018, and then digging into the registration numbers, I was very surprised that it was not represented by a Democrat. Not that obviously it's the most blue district in the state, but it is very flippable. So I think definitely if Paige can finish out the campaign cycle strong, and if she can get some more volunteer support and help with lit drops in Williamsport, I think she's got a good chance.
I would definitely echo everything they just said. Like Christian was saying, you know, the registration advantage in Williamsport is actually benefits Democrats. And like he was saying, like Chuck was saying, we had elected our first Democrat and first Black mayor for the first time in almost 30 years. So we're trying to make up that loss. But you know as well as we do that the Republican Party in Lycoming County is actually pretty strong because they have all the money to kind of reverse that trend, which is quite unfortunate.
Yeah, sometime I would love to do a podcast about Williamsport politics with you guys because it's totally
it's interesting.
Totally batshit.
It's interesting.
I mean, and that seat used to be held by a Democrat, Rick Mayor Beto. I'm not sure if he had two or three terms. So the seat is flippable, but when they redrew the district, they made sure to add some of the outlining areas of the city to make it harder. In my view, Williamsport should be its own district and then draw a circle around and the rest could be the 84th, but I don't draw the lines.
If Lee doesn't happen to win, I think in coming years, I think Rick Mirabito and also Mike Hanna would be great candidates for the 12th. I think that would. I was hoping that one of them would run.
I certainly agree, and I think if things go our way, and Amanda Waldman and Michelle Siegel and Jackie Baker are elected, I know there will be focus on that current job, but I also think it's about time, instead of having just the Fab Four women down around Philly, let's have the Fab 18 across the entire state, or however many districts there are.
Yeah. So you guys have been involved for a long time, and you've run campaigns, and you've seen where, as Democrats, we've sort of hit a wall and where we've had issues. And how do you think that we can build, how do you think as Democrats we can win more in central Pennsylvania? And I think part of that is a conversation about creating a unique central Pennsylvania Democratic brand. I think we used to have one more around Coal Country and Schuylkill County and Berks County and stuff like that. But I think that's kind of, that's far gone. And then I think part of that is also talking about like where is the capacity lacking? Does anybody want to kick us off
Yes, I'd like to start. And full disclosure, both Chris and I have ran for office as well. So I think, we can look at this not just from the staffer side, but from the candidate's side as well. I think one of the issues, and I know there's a lot of people working on this, is I think Democrats wait to the last minute to decide to run for things because, quite frankly, people aren't asked to run. Women are not asked to run. Typically, it's the richer Caucasian males that are asked to run for offices. So we have to start by asking people to run and encouraging them to start building their campaigns early. There's nothing wrong with a last minute decision, but if someone's going to be running in 2022, quite frankly, they need to start working on that campaign on November 4th of this year. So I think starting early and building that structure where next year that candidate can help out the school board candidates and the city council candidates. So when it's their turn to run, then they can call on those people that they helped to help come and work on their campaigns. So I think starting early is very crucial. I also think one of the differences when you look at the Republicans is And I think it's a good problem, but Democrats, we run working class people. Whereas if you look at, example, Amanda's opponent, if you dig into his campaign finance report, he wrote his campaign a check for over $40,000. A lot of these candidates, they live paycheck to paycheck. Amanda's a single mom of two. So while I prefer we continue running working class people, I think we need to give the candidates, besides starting early, we need to encourage them to do trainings so they're able to fundraise better and raise more money so we can be more competitive. There's so many programs out there. Two that come to mind, Emerge, which it helps women run for office. And I know Jackie and Michelle both went through that program. And then I went through the Gay and Lesbian the Victory Funds training, and I think that really helped me a lot. You can learn, yes, you know, a lot of us have political science degrees, a lot of us have campaign experience, but that training I did, I think I learned more from that in a few days than being on a campaign for 10 years. Because I think when you work with experts who are going to see things differently than you and your candidates are, I think that's super helpful. So I really hope if people do not win this time around that, you know, they take a few days off for self-care and then they start building their campaigns for 2022 and also help encourage their friends and family to run for school board or council. My biggest issue, and I have felt this way for years, Democrats don't win because Democrats don't run for offices. There are so many county seats and school board seats that, quite frankly, it's a lot of Republicans run. So I think if we are asking people early, we're helping them prepare early, then we could be more successful. One other thought while I am on that. I think a lot of people, even if they are hardcore Republican or they've typically voted Republican, campaigns, and a lot of ours are, should not be focusing on, you know, the hot issues of the day. Campaigns are not supposed to be, you know, the super exciting, let's talk about abortion, let's talk about gay marriage. Our candidates have been, and always should be, talking about issues that keep people up at night. The Joe down the street, he doesn't stay up all night wondering if his girlfriend is going to be able to get an abortion or not. He stays up all night wondering how he's going to pay his bills. How is he going to pay his rent? So while I'm not discounting all those other issues, Democrats, I think, really need to focus on the issues that people care about most. I was a big fan in Virginia, Danica Rome, who is openly transgender. She didn't focus on that. Yes, she was open. You know, this is who I am. But her campaign was about fixing a highway. And it was even on her signs, something along, let's fix road, whatever. And she made her whole campaign about fixing the roads. And she beat a long-term incumbent, I think
it was somebody in the leadership position.
Yes. So, like, yes, your identity is important. I think it's super wonderful when we're running diverse candidates. But most people want to know what you're going to do that's going to affect their life. And I think, yes, there were people who certainly were not, who voted against her because of who she is, but most people voted for her because they wanted to fix the damn roads. So that's something that's been on my mind a lot.
Yeah, and I think to piggyback off of what Chuck was speaking about, because for sure, Jackie's campaign is running a fix the pothole strategy as well. But I think it's also important too, that if Democrats are engaged on social issues, that we go on the offense. Because frankly, I think Democrats in these types of red districts are often too concerned to touch on the issues. And then when they do get backed up kind of on defense, we just look like we're afraid to talk about things that may be important to people. So I think definitely as Democrats, reaching out to faith communities, reaching out to Republican community organizations, and just being present in your community and not being afraid to talk about issues when they come up. Obviously, like Chuck was saying, make your main campaign themes about wallet issues, about kitchen table issues. But if you are engaged on things like abortion, go on the offense. Bring up the fact that in a multi-faith society, it's a question of ethics and not morals. So I think definitely there, and I'm sure there are going to be comparisons made here that I'm a rioting Democrat, but I think going on the offensive and being a bit more aggressive in our ground game and really connecting with people and with people's concerns about social issues, if they have them, is very important.
I could not agree more with them. You know, I think it's that and so much more that we face as Democrats in our area of the state. And a lot of the issues kind of can come down to messaging. You know, Republicans know what their people want to hear. And like we were saying, it's abortion, it's Second Amendment, it's all the kind of conservative stuff they've been spewing for decades. And our problem with Democrats is, like kind of Christian was touching upon, you know, we do go on the offensive because we have to, because they throw at us, you know, we're baby killers, we're going to tax and spend you, we're going to do this, we're going to do that, we're going to make life horrible. Well, these are the people that have been doing that to us for decades. So our issues really come down to messaging and kind of like what Chuck was saying, you know, candidate recruitment, getting them out there, kind of, you know, I hate to use this word, but I'm going to say it, improving our margins election by election. But we've been doing this for decades. So messaging is one of our biggest problems. And sometimes we do have a hard time trying to find candidates willing to go out there and talk about that kind of stuff because they're not used to hearing about substantive issues like we're talking about. They're used to hearing the same stuff they hear every single year. And I think slowly but surely we're turning the tide.
Yeah, I very much am on the election by election, we improve our margins bandwagon. I'll echo what Chuck has to say about trainings. I did a AFL-CIO Pathways to Power training for campaign staff actually a number of years ago, and it's helped me so much think about power and how you frame a campaign. Something that I think, an open question that I have is, you know, I've spent a lot of time working through the Democratic committees. It's something that I've done when I've when I was the field director for Mike Milosevic's campaign, and then also, you know, I was elected to the Union County Democratic Committee and spent a lot of time working through that committee to build capacity in our area. Do you guys think that that is, do we need to be focusing our energy on building up capacity through these Democratic committees, or do you think we need to be forming other types of organizations that work in tandem?
All of the above.
So this is a interesting question for me, being as a county committee vice chair. I think I agree with Chris's comment about all of the above. I think there are so many different groups, like the progressive group and the Moms Demand Action and the like, I mean, Women Democrats. And I know there's groups like this in different counties all across the state. I think where we need to work on is how do we work together better? And I think, I'm sure other parts of the state probably agree with that. If you are out lick dropping, say for Joe Biden's campaign, and that's great. But if our county committee was not made aware of that, and we're going to lick drop as well, had we worked together, and I'm not saying that this doesn't happen, but I'm just using the example that we need to work together and let everyone know what every group is doing. I can speak for like coming our chair, who's been our chair, I think, since last summer. I could be wrong on the timing, but she has been very good in terms of, at our public meetings, she always allocates time to the progressive group and our local LGBT group and the women's group. Even if it's only a minute or two of floor time, she's still calling on them to give a report. So everyone from the Democratic Committee is hearing what those groups are doing. So I think everyone needs to have a seat at the table, and I think sometimes we run into there's too many different tables. So I think if we can all come around the same table and keep doing the amazing work that all these groups are doing, we could just become stronger, I think, if the coalition was stronger.
Yeah, I would concur with Chuck, too. Coordination, especially when national campaigns come in and try to work with our local groups, is incredibly important. I have been somewhat disappointed in the Joe Biden campaign's data sharing. So far, it's been getting better.
They're always bad at it.
Yeah, it's been getting better, so I'm hopeful. Definitely coordination. And I think crucially, getting county committees to understand that even though their county is extremely red, and they may feel that the work that they do or the votes that they have only matters statewide or matters nationwide, if you work down ballot up, you get far more votes for the up ballot candidate by promoting a down ballot candidate than you get for a down ballot candidate promoting the up ballot candidate. So I think working from local up is incredibly crucial, and really working with the county committees and helping leadership that in many cases is demoralized because they've been red for decades. Helping them understand that, yes, while improving the margins cycle by cycle is a goal, the goal is also to win. And we can if we just keep working on it and focus local.
Yeah. And I think importantly, there's kind of like this feedback loop where we have this horrible system of brain drain that like leeches our young people away from rural areas. And that is so because we have these, it's really difficult to, you know, have a really good job and feel like you're a part of the mainstream culture in our areas sometimes. But I think that, you know, electing more Democrats locally and having more progressive policies, you know, at our township and city levels, can help improve this, and we can make palpable changes to our local areas that make them better places to stay, and it also thereby increases our bench for these candidates for state rep and state senate and Congress. And I would really love to see some sort of organization that like really heavily invests in municipal elections, like maybe this next cycle. I think the return on investment that you get for investing in good local candidates is just amazing, because we do have a shot at winning some of these, like a really solid shot, and we can change we can actually change our area to make it better. We increase our bench of like really good candidates. I interviewed Peter Buck, who's running, I think, in the 171st, I might get that wrong though, against Carrie Benninghoff over in Center County. And he's a township supervisor and he's done all these amazing things and he has experience, being an elected official. And it's so helpful when you're trying to take that next step to already be an elected official. I think we need to spearhead an effort to invest in all these great local officials next time, local races.
Well, we have that opportunity next year. So if anybody's listening who's willing to do that kind of organizing on the local level, please take this as your sign to go for it.
Beautiful. And then I want to be mindful of you guys' time here. But really quickly, I think we're going to wrap up here kind of soon. Is there anything you guys want to include that we haven't talked about in terms of building up a better local democratic structure?
You know, Tip O'Neill used to say all politics is local. And, you know, Tip O'Neill had a great relationship with Reagan, you know, Democrat, Republican. That's how politics used to be. To build up a good democratic organization, you know, you really do got to start at the local level, like everyone has pretty much kind of summarized, because the stuff that, you know, our state representatives are doing, our state senators are doing, our people at the local level, your school boards, your city council, those are the stuff that affects us more on a daily basis than the stuff that anything Donald Trump or Congress does in Washington. So if we start having an emphasis more on your local stuff and why it's important and getting people out to vote on elections that are non-presidential, we can see a difference. And half the problem is, kind of like people were saying, candidate recruitment. Some people are just not brave enough. They might have too many skeletons in their closet, whatever the excuse might be. Or politics is just so divisive in a way it never has been, ever. So building up the infrastructure at the local level really does start with having your small people in your borough councils, on your school boards. That's where we start to turn, you know, this brain drain around, because the brain drain is very much a real thing. And it's not getting any better. So having your small candidates on the smaller levels, that's where it starts.
Yeah. And really quickly, and I do think that there's room for like a regional democratic brand when you're building it from the local level. Like we can be the party of, you know, like public transportation and regionalization and local economic prosperity and sustainability and stuff like that.
Exactly.
That's a great opportunity for us. I have been asking people that have been coming on the podcast what they've been reading or streaming on Netflix during the pandemic. So if you guys want to share, that'd be great.
Oh my God. The Politician and The Crown. Those are my two go-tos. I got to say that.
The Politician. Did they just release a new season of that?
No, but I'm done. It's one thing I hate about Netflix, because I go through and I binge like in one day and I go through the entire season.
I binge that too last spring or something like that.
Oh, it's awesome.
It was a good show.
I mean, I'm not going to lie. If it wasn't for the Tiger King, I don't think the spring would have been as fun. And I think the one good takeaway of the Tiger King is – even though with all this divisiveness in the country, and I'm not going to elaborate, but I think every American agrees about something that happened in that film. And I think it was nice to see people from all walks of life agree about one key thing in related to the Tiger King. So
can kill their husband.
I wasn't going to say that. No, I actually really liked the Tiger King. And because of that, I did watch Dancing with the Stars. I'm not going to lie. And I was very disappointed when Carol Baskin was voted off.
I'll second that motion.
Christian, what if fess up?
Yeah, so I'll be honest. And it is interesting because as a campaign staffer, you are constantly running around with your hair on fire. But the past week or so, I have been catching up on the classic Supermarket Sweep. I'm not sure why I want to watch something that looks like what I do, except with groceries. But
I don't know that.
Okay, you have to watch it. It's a game show where people run around and fling food into their cart.
Is it on Netflix?
Yes, it is on Netflix, and there is also a reboot coming up on ABC, I want to say.
Beautiful. I'm kind of surprised you've never heard of that, Taylor.
Yeah, I don't know. We'll see. I just finished Dark, and so I'm kind of on the market for a new show.
No spoilers. I have a couple more episodes.
In the whole series?
Yep.
All right. Well, good luck. Is there anything that you guys want to say, like people, where people can follow you and get your spicy election takes? You guys on Twitter or anything?
FuckBlack12 at Twitter.
That's great.
I am the Chris Benson on Twitter and Instagram.
I am at See the Rainbow. That's the letter C and the words The Rainbow. On Twitter and Instagram, I haven't had time to post much about anything besides the elections I'm working on, but hey.
Well, it's an absolute pleasure having you guys on. I really value, I value this conversation and that we can have this, and here's to the future.
Let's do this again.
Amen. Thanks for having us, Taylor.
Yeah, thank you.
Travel, I haven't had my share, man.